take this madness any longer. Eye for an eye, bomb for a bomb. How can prayers for peace be answered while the battle rages on? No more, no, no more nightmares. No more, no, no more bomb scares. For the sake of the ones we love, shalom, shalom.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. It is, I'm here in Southern California, fortunately not where the fires are, but not that far away. But I want to welcome you all to Jewish Perspectives on Politics and the News with Bert Siegel here in WWDB. My guest this morning is the executive director of the PAC that you know I'm part of, Democratic Jewish Outreach of Pennsylvania, and Becky Galler, who is our executive director. Becky, how long have you been involved now with the PAC?
Well, it seems like it's been a long slog, Bert, but I really just started back in June of last year. So at the beginning of what was the start of the crunch time of the campaign. So it's been 7 months, but it's been a wild and crazy 7 months.
And you really, we made the right decision. We really, you are our first executive director. And as you know, there was even some debate whether we needed an executive director. And Jill Zippin, who is our chair, has functioned not only as the chair, but really as the staff. And it became overwhelming as much as she was doing a great job. And we finally decided to hire an executive director. You came along. So we feel fortunate. I hope you do as well. Why don't you tell us a little bit, though, about where you grew up and what motivated you to do what you do? Because, I know there are more rewarding things, but I know you really feel good about what you do. I mean, your enthusiasm is infectious, and that's fantastic because we are a volunteer organization, and volunteers have all kinds of choices of where they want to put their time and hopefully their financial resources. So you've done that. Not only have you done a good job technically, but I think you've encouraged enthusiasm on the part of people who are involved in the PAC. So as one of the founders of the PAC, I want to thank you. So, but who are you?
Well, thank you for the kind words, Bert. It's been a real pleasure to be working with all of you at DJOP. It is an incredible group of volunteers, and I commend you for the years that you've worked together as an all-volunteer organization. You know, as you said correctly, I am your first professional hire, and it's really extraordinary the impact that you all have had with Jill Zippin at the helm, but also with a really terrific, strong board of directors. So, mazel for all of you for getting this far. And I'm pleased to be joining with you now to carry you all into the next phase of your development as an organization. So a little bit about me. I am born and raised in South Jersey, right over the bridge. And after graduating from college, I moved to Washington, D.C. for a year, caught the political bug, but then moved to Chicago, where I lived for about 35 years and working in a variety of positions, which I'll tell you about in a minute, and then moved back to the Philadelphia area last year. So this is home. This is really home for me. So it's really good to be back. When my professional career, I worked for a variety of Jewish philanthropic organizations, as well as some political organizations. I worked all across the Jewish political spectrum. So I worked for the American Jewish Committee for a number of years. I worked for J Street. I served on the board of directors of a variety of Jewish philanthropic organizations, as well as political organizations, Planned Parenthood, some gun control organizations that I feel strongly about. Served on the board of my synagogue. So really a wide variety. Coming back to Pennsylvania and finding DJOP, which incorporates both the Jewish and the democratic values that I hold dear, really is sort of a coming home for me. It allows me to wear all of my hats on one head. So it's really great to be here. And this position really is a coda to my professional and volunteer career.
What are the priorities? I mean, obviously, it's to elect Democrats, but we can't do everything. I mean, we are a small PAC. Well, you are the entire staff, basically. I mean, we have some very, very part-time people helping with some of the things, but you really Basically, and while Jill does a lot, basically, there's nobody for you to assign tasks to. So you have to decide what are not only your priorities, but the PAC's priorities. So as we head into what are very, very troubling waters, and waters we really don't understand. I mean, this is such an atypical political time that we're living in. What do you see as the PAC's priorities, as well as your own? But obviously, I mean, if you say to us, well, I think you really ought to get involved in this or that, then we have to decide, yes, you know, does that work for everybody? Because, you know, as a volunteer organization, I mean, I know I was the executive director once also for the American Jewish Committee. Because the staff says you have to do it, doesn't mean that the volunteers are going to go in that direction. So you also have to motivate people. So exactly what, and I know you give a lot of thought to what we ought to be doing, but what do you think should be our priorities? And what do you think is just spinning wheels? But I mean, in politics, very often you get involved in something that's not going to happen, that doesn't make any sense. So I think we have our effectiveness, something, this has to be something we give a lot of thought to.
You're absolutely right. And I think, as you know, our work is cyclical. And we are at the whim of the political cycle. So when I was first hired in June, as I said, we were really ramping up our efforts for the presidential campaign and the congressional campaigns. So that took really all of our energy, all of our time, all of our thinking. And, you know, even though we did not win the war, there were some battles that we did win. And we can talk about that if you'd like. But as of at the end of November, middle of November, that door was shut and we need to now regroup, as a lot of organizations are regrouping, and think about how we strengthen ourselves internally for the work that is going to start up very, very soon. Let me tell you, let me give you you and your listeners a preview of what's coming ahead. In 2025, we have some important judicial retention races coming up. And, you know, normally, you know, no one pays attention to these. Very, very low turnout, because it's people don't realize people in a normal year, these are pro forma elections. Judges are elected for a term, and whether they were retained or not is just sort of automatic yes, unless there is some egregious reason to vote them out. However, this year being the beginning of what I call the chaos of the next 4 years, these judges are not automatically going to be retained. And I think that there is going to be a real push to not retain them and so that the Republican Party will put in their own. There is a chance that if these judges are not retained, that we will get some very unqualified judges.
Would you mind taking just a couple of minutes, though, explaining to my listeners why those races are important? Because very often people say, oh, what difference does it make with the judges? What does it have to do with me? And I think we have to understand that it has, in many ways, what judges decide have more importance on our lives than you know, what Congress decides. So why is this important?
The judiciary at the federal, state, and local level really have much more of an impact on your life than the presidential election. These are the real close to home bread and butter issues that voters said that matter to them, that their federal elected officials at the top of the ballot weren't paying enough attention to. So these are really the issues that matter the most that will be decided in the courts. And look, you can see that at the very high level. Take the Supreme Court, for example. The Supreme Court is now flipped. It is more conservative than it was several years ago because of the appointments that have been made over the last couple of years. And civil rights and human rights that we took for granted have been overturned. Roe v. Wade is a perfect example. There is now talk about gay marriage being on the docket potentially. So
and one of the things that the Jewish community has to be concerned with are church-state issues.
Absolutely.
And again, I mean, talk about things that we just assumed were going to be the law of the land forever. That's not necessarily true.
Our children and grandchildren may have to go to public school in the very near future and say prayers before they start their school day. And the prayers may not be the kinds of prayers that we, if we want our children to pray at all, which many of us don't, because school is
at least not in public school. We want them to pray in synagogue, but not in public school.
You can pray in their churches, in their synagogues, in their mosques, wherever it is appropriate to pray. But for those of us who want to keep prayer out of school, there may even be prayer, if prayer is allowed, it may even be prayers that, you know, we really don't want our kids to be praying to gods that they don't believe, whatever. The point is that the judiciary decides a lot of the issues that really are the bread and butter dining room table kinds of issues. So that's really important. And then the second thing that we need to worry about, back to your original question, which is what are we going to be focused on at DJOP in the next year or so? Part two of that is 2026. We have a governor's race coming up. Very, very important that we continue to support Josh Shapiro, our governor, and also the congressional races come back again every 2 years.
And we lost a couple of very, very good members of Congress.
That's correct. We lost Matt Cartwright and Susan Wild in Pennsylvania, and we are going to work like the devil to flip those seats back to blue. The majority in the House hangs in the balance, and you know, a couple of races here and there that we can flip the balance of the House. And you know, I'm sure you know this, and your listeners know this, that in an off-cycle presidential year, gains are usually made by the minority party in the House. So we are quite optimistic that we can do this, but it's going to take a lot of work and a lot of money, a lot of energy.
Speaking about a lot of money, how can people contribute to Democratic Jewish Outreach?
What a great question, Bert. Thank you so much for asking. We really need your support. The support of your listeners, they can go to djop.org and make a contribution online. They can also send us a check. And all that information is available on our website, djop.org.
And you know, I mean, I do it through Act Blue all the time. And
when you go into our website, it will, and it says, you know, how do I donate? It will direct you to an Act Blue page, making your contribution very, very simple and easy.
Exactly, exactly. And even small contributions matter. And a lot of people would say, well, you know, I don't have a whole lot of money, or I'm retired.
I would encourage your listeners to consider a recurring donation. So, you know, $36 a month, make it recurring. It'll automatically pay. And, you know, you've hit it once and you don't have to worry about it again. But those dollars that come to us every month are very meaningful.
Yeah. And we do a lot of programming. We do a lot of educational programming. And everything costs money. So we make contributions directly to the candidates that we support.
Oh, absolutely. Right.
What if the Harris campaign had said to you, what do you think we ought to be doing? I mean, I think we were all quite pleased with the response of the Jewish voters. You know, you get different estimates, but it was something close to the normal range of the low 70s, I believe, which is, you know, if everybody voted that way, you know, we would be celebrating. If they said to you, if the Harris campaign had said to you, what should we be doing differently? Not so much for the Jewish voter. I mean, there are any things, because, I mean, you've been involved in politics a long time. What might you have said to them? Well, nothing. Maybe they did the right thing and the American voters did the wrong thing.
Clearly, American voters did the wrong thing, in my opinion. So let's just leave that there. But Bert, honestly, if I had the answer to that, I would be sitting on a beach in Tahiti with a drink with a little umbrella in it. And I would not be worrying about the fate of our country and our world. Look, everyone's doing polling, analysis of the polling, and what went wrong, and what
everybody's blaming everybody else.
Everybody's an expert, just like everybody's an expert on, you know, firefighting and you know, submersibles to the Titanic, and everybody becomes an expert on everything. So I don't know, and I'm not going to pretend that I have the answers. But you mentioned the Jewish vote, and yes, time and again, the Jewish voter, the Jewish vote tends to be between 70% and 75% Democratic, and really, it's history has borne this out. It really does not change that much. I believe the last one who really made an impact on that was Ronald Reagan, and I think still Jewish community voted, you know, in the high 60s or something like that. So, but I will say that in our own little corner of the universe, and I spoke to this earlier, that DJOP did have a little bit of success. The national Jewish vote, depending on the polls that you read, the national Jewish vote was 71% for the Harris ticket. In Pennsylvania, the polling says 75%. For DJOP, we beat the national average for Jewish vote. We outperformed every swing state in the country. So yes, great. But, you know, in the scheme of things, not so great. But we really worked hard at getting out the vote in the Jewish community, helping the Harris campaign find the Jewish voters. Where do they live? Where do they vote? How do they vote? How to mobilize them? We worked hand in glove with the campaign. So I think that as far as the Jewish vote for the Harris campaign, I think we did well. However, there were some other battles that we lost. I mean, losing Bob Casey in the Senate was really a tragedy. And I don't quite have the answer to that. I mean, Bob Casey, as you all know, is not considered a radical by any means. He's been around for a very long time.
And a very decent man.
A very decent man and well-respected on both sides of the aisle. And I the way I look at that is I look at more national trends. And I think you have a combination of so many things. And I'll just list a couple of them, which is, you know, voters felt that their needs weren't being addressed and their voices weren't being heard. So the loudest voice in the room, the more commercials, was Donald Trump and the Republican Party. And the fear of the other, the fear of immigration, unchecked immigration. I think that there were a lot of scare tactics that were being used and quite successfully. So a lot of people say that, you know, Democrats have a messaging problem. Yes, I believe that's true, but that is not the whole story. I really do believe that voters felt that their voices weren't heard, their needs weren't being met. So they voted for the other guy. And whoever the other guy was, whether it was Donald Trump, whether it was now Senator McCormick, that's how they went. Now, I'm torn. I'm conflicted. Do I want things to turn badly? Do I want the country to really start to decline? No, of course not. But I want voters to understand that the core values that are important to the Democratic Party are really important to a wide swath of Americans. Affordable health care, reproductive freedom for women, climate crisis. We are watching a real-time climate crisis happening right now.
I said to somebody who said they were going to vote for Republicans, and they don't normally do that. And I said to them, look, they're a grandfather like I am. And I said, yeah, how about your grandchildren, what they're going to breathe in? What they're going to learn in public school, what they're going to be able to read when they go to the library.
It's hard to have that conversation when voters in the moment are struggling.
And you know, I couldn't agree with you more. We went out a couple of weeks ago and we got two hamburgers and two iced teas. And I don't even think we had dessert. And it came out to $40-something. And you
know what?
But if you want to take your children or your grandchildren out for hamburgers, it's going to cost you $100.
What about buying a home? What about being able to afford a home? Just to be, you have a job and you can save up and afford to buy a home. That's not the case anymore.
In this neighborhood in San Diego that sell for $1 million, they're cottages.
Yeah.
So exactly. For a young couple who want to buy a home.
So Democrats need to figure out how to, and again, we're talking about basic economic issues. The Democratic Party needs to figure out how to work on these issues and deliver for the American voter. You know, a vote is not automatic. Candidates need to earn your vote. And in the eyes of many Americans, the Democratic candidates did not earn their vote. And beyond that, I don't have the answer.
There has been a lot of discussion, the perception that the Democratic Party has become too woke, for lack of a better term, and that hurt, particularly among white men and Hispanic men as well. I mean, I think we misread. The Hispanic community does have a significant population that are socially conservative. But do you think that really hurt the Democrats, or is it just, it's somebody else's fault? So if I'm on the right, I'll say, well, it's the fault of the left.
I don't know.
Okay.
Again,
answer.
I don't know. Again, I'm thinking about the little umbrella in my drink. I wish I had the answer. I think it was a tsunami of events. I think there was just so much happening at once, and you cannot ignore the personality of Donald Trump. Like it or hate it, it's a factor. And I don't think we have ever faced anything quite like that. Combine that with the media, the way folks get their information. You know, a lot of us exist in an echo chamber, and we watch, we consume news how we want to consume news and block all the other stuff out. And the Republicans and independents all do the same thing. So there is not this, and facts, we question facts now. Who questions facts? But people are questioning the news that they consume. So all of this happening at once is a confluence of elements that we've never seen before. And I think we don't have a handle yet on information and how folks receive information and consume it. And I think that that's a huge part of it, along with, and it fits right into Donald Trump's cult of personality. He uses the media to his advantage. And I've never seen anyone do it better, honestly.
Yeah, well, you know what? I mean, the point you're making about the news is not news. The news is more often opinion.
Of course.
And it is opinion that reaffirms what you already believe.
Right. Name me somebody who's the equivalent of Walter Cronkite.
Well, that's exactly what it's so funny. We all look to Walter Cronkite, but if he said it, we knew it to be true. Well, we know. I mean, if you watch Fox or if you watch MSNBC, it's, that's true. Well, it's what you already believe. Everybody likes to believe that what they believe is true.
Of course.
And the way we get our information today just, kind of says, yeah, you're right, and he's wrong. So,
right.
Do you have a candidate to run for president as a Democrat in 4 years?
I mean, I think Democrats have a very strong bench. I like a lot of the people coming up. I think that I hope we have a very wide open primary. I'm looking forward to seeing all the Democrats across the debate stage and hearing from them and meeting them and having the opportunity for them to make their case. I really like our governor. I think Josh Shapiro he's done a fantastic job as governor of this state. And I think he has he knows how to reach across the aisle. I think he is a strong candidate for president in the next election. I love Governor Whitmer in Michigan. She was out on the campaign trail like crazy, and a lot of people got to know her while she was campaigning for Harris. So I think she's certainly needs to be mentioned in this field. I love Pete Buttigieg. What he's done in his cabinet position has been unbelievable. And again, these are the issues that people pay attention to. Fixing roads, fixing rail and air safety. I think he's been terrific. I think he'd be a viable candidate. Jared Polis in Colorado. I think he's done a great job. Wes Moore in Maryland. I mean, I think that there are a lot of very qualified folks out there, and I'm excited about hearing from all of them.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. I think that there are a lot of people, younger people, who we don't all know enough about yet.
Yes.
Well, look, when Donald Trump announced already, he was a national figure, and as crazy as he was, people knew who he was, and unfortunately, there were people who liked who he was, and it didn't matter what he believed or if he believed in anything other than himself. But I think a number of these people need to really get their names out there and have people have some understanding of what kind of president they would make. And I mean, you could like somebody, that doesn't mean they're going to be a good president. And do you think the fact that, number one, that Harris was a person of color, as the term is, she's as much Asian as she is black. But did you think that mattered? Do you think it mattered that, I mean, look, both she and Hillary Clinton lost to a terrible candidate, and what they had in common is that they were both women. Do you think gender and in Harris's case was a problem?
It's entirely possible. It's entirely possible. Again, I don't know. I hope not, but it is. You can't ignore it. You can't ignore the fact. Absolutely.
Well, you know what? I mean, Obama did get elected twice. So, I mean, obviously a male, but an African-American, and a lot of people thought there's no way we would elect a black man as president of the United States. And he won and was reelected. So it's hard to tell what's in people's minds when they get into the polls.
And that's the danger that we get into when we do a lot of these post-election analyses. We just don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. Is there anything else you want to tell my listeners?
No, I know we're I'm looking at the clock and I see we're at time, and I just want to caution your listeners, if I can, to keep your eyes on the important things. Try to not pay attention to the chaos. Donald Trump is going to try to throw a lot of stuff at us. Greenland, Panama, all of these things are a distraction. Don't pay attention to the noise. Really focus on the issues that matter. And pay attention and educate yourselves and just try to really focus on what's
and a
important.
A great way to educate themselves is by getting information from an organization called Democratic Jewish Outreach.
That's absolutely correct.
Again, we do a newsletter. I occasionally write a column in the newsletter. But you really can learn what's happening politically and Jewishly as well. I mean, we are, you know, one of the things that we have mentioned all along is not only are we a Democratic PAC, but it's not an accident that the term Jewish is in our name. We really believe that we are informed. You know, people sometimes talk about the Christian conservatives being values voters. I think the fact that the Jewish community votes for overwhelmingly for more progressive candidates is a reflection that a lot of us look to our Jewish values as to what kind of government we want. And that's what we're about in DJOP. And how can people get on our mailing list?
They can do that. They can sign up to be on our mailing list at the website, djop.org.
Even if they don't contribute, although they should, but even if
absolutely.
They don't.
Absolutely. Okay.
Please, I urge people to do that, and it is informative. I enjoy reading it, even things I haven't written. All right, thank you so much. I really, again, I want to thank you for the work you've done for the PAC, and people have to take this very, very seriously. I mean, as a grandfather, I really think about what kind of nation my young. I have a granddaughter who's going to be 4 years old soon, and I really think about when I'm no longer around, I want to know what kind of country she's going to be living in as a Jewish woman. So
I agree with you. Bert, thanks so much for having me. Thanks for your support and your hard work on the board of DJOP and for having me on the broadcast. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Take good care. Bye-bye. Bye.